The Nets are just too sweet. After some sloppiness in game one, they still get a double-digit win. Then they dominate the Celtics in game two from the jump, winning by 22 points to take a 2-0 series lead. We'll break down what we saw in games one and two and look ahead to games three and four in Boston. Could this be an easy sweep for the Nets? We'll be joined by a Celtics fan, co-host of the Michael Kay Show on ESPN Radio in New York, and Hot 97 host Peter Rosenberg. So wave your towel like the Celtics should be doing. It's time for a playoff edition of Full Court on Flatbush, next from the New York Post.
The next stop is Barclays Center.
Full Court on Flatbush.
Flatbush Avenue.
It's the podcast. The New York Post.
Brooklyn bound.
BK. More stars in the sky.
The three. It's going.
Brooklyn Nets. Take them to the sick baseline.
We are back here on Full Court on Flatbush, a special playoff edition of our Brooklyn Nets podcast from the New York Post. I'm your host, Robin Lundberg, alongside my co-host, Nets legend, number 30, Kerry Kittles. You'll hear our producer, Jake Brown, during the show as well. Follow the whole crew on Twitter, at Robin Lundberg, at Kerry underscore Kittles 30, and at Jake Brown Radio. Do us a favor and give us a 5-star rating. Write a nice review on Apple Podcasts, would you? ESPN New York and Hot 97 host Peter Rosenberg will join us in the second half of the show. But first, we were all back in the building at Barclays for game two of the Nets Celtics series. Nets up 2-0, of course. But as I've referenced before, you know, a great philosopher once said, there's levels to this. And Jake and I were up a level from Kerry, who was below our level. But really, that's the wrong word because Kerry's living at a different level. And I just want to tell a quick private story for a second because Jake's right behind me. And at the same time, he's doing a text thread. And he's, you know, he keeps trying to get Kerry to come hang out with us peasants up there. And
I said we would go down there too. But, you know, Kerry's noticed very easily. So if he comes up to even the concourse, everyone's going to want a picture and notice him. So I don't blame him not wanting to get bombarded by Nets fans.
Let me read it verbatim. Jake texts, "You courtside again, Kerry? Come meet up, bro." And Kerry's response, which may be the best clapback I've ever heard, was, "Bro, I'm sitting with Lindsey Vonn, and you want me to come upstairs? Come on, Jake."
You know, what can I say? I mean, it's just, you know, we all get privileged sometimes. And, you know, when I'm in the Barclays Center, they usually treat me nice. So, you know, it's just one of those things.
But they showed you on the Jumbotron in game one. I mean, don't undersell yourself. Stop doing that. Like, you had the fist pump. You were, you know, you're a legend in that building.
You got to play to the crowd a little bit, you know. Everyone's go. It's listen, sports is entertainment. It's the business, right? So, you know, you got to kind of play to whenever the cameras are on. And, you know, I'm able to do that sometimes.
We're casually texting about the game Saturday. Then I look up. It's like, special, like, Kerry Kittles, like, highlights, and then he's there pumping his fist. I'm like, you didn't say you were coming? What is this? He's like, oh, late invite, but I'm here. So how about that? Came out of nowhere, Kerry.
You know, that's how it worked out. You know, got a chance to see my boys hoop. Got to support them.
Did you see the Whistle Sports tweet from yesterday with the old Nets logo? First player you think of when you see this logo. Jason Kidd was trending for a while, but I saw your name mentioned a lot. You know, a lot of people remember them some Kerry Kittles.
Well, I was there for a while. You know, I was there before Kidd came. You know, it was some tumultuous years prior to that. I guess the fans were going a little bit way back.
In our peasant seats, Robin, I kept looking up in the rafters, and I'm looking for number 30 up there, and I'm waiting for that number 30 Kittles to be retired. And I sometimes I think it is up there, and I keep looking up, and it's not. So maybe one day.
Maybe one day.
I want to give two quick observations before we get onto the game itself from just the experience. I loved being back in a building like that, doing something like that. I thought the energy was great. Hopefully, I think game one may have been a bit of an icebreaker for people getting back into a situation like that. But two things. The thing I missed least about those sort of events, especially in the seats that Jake and I were in, or the whole, like, whenever somebody's coming back from the bathroom or the concession stand, and you have to get up and be, yes, like, up against the scene, excuse me, sorry, coming through, you know, like,
it's tight. Yeah. It's tight up there, yeah.
The only one Kerry got in front of him is Kevin Durant and James Harden are the only ones in his obstruction.
And then the other thing, there was a bit of a small MVP chant for James Harden at one point, and I think I have some advice for, I don't mind that chant at all, But I feel like the crowd should chant MVP for all three guys at various different points, just so there's no air of like one of you is more important than the other, you know?
I think it might be all four guys because Joe Harris might have to get one after what he did in game two, just lighting up the scoreboard.
Or Blake Griffin, right? Or a couple of dunks. He's not in Detroit anymore, is Blake Griffin. And I think that's the ultimate point from that game. That was Showtime Nets, right? That was globetrotting Nets. That was whatever the word, the way you want to describe it. They were showing off. They were stunting in that game, Kerry, especially once they got the lead. You know, Harden was doing a lot of pop, 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 you know, to let people know I got the handles here. Blake Griffin is finishing it at the rim. And it was a bit of a continuation of that highlight play we talked about last week. Game one, the Nets struggled in the first half. They played pretty good defense the whole game. They wind up pulling away. But this was that, you know, fully activated Death Star kind of team.
It was. And it was a consistent effort from start to finish. You got a chance to see how they can really be, you know, the potential of this group of guys. And, you know, you saw everyone in their bags doing their thing, you know, and when you see Joe Harris spreading the floor like he does, it just opens up all kind of driving lanes. It opens up everything else for the other guys to do what they do well. But I was really impressed with Steve Nash more so than anything. Just think about this. DeAndre Jordan, has he played? He's been able to tap into all of those other pieces throughout the season. And now it's playoff time, right? Now the rotation shortens. And who's left out? DeAndre Jordan. And it's like, all right, you're going to need him against the Sixers. You probably will need him against the Bucks as well. But the job that Nash has done in that staff is unbelievable for me, watching what he's been able to do, keeping all these guys, how he manages the stars. He keeps Harden away from Durant and Irving at times and brings them in with those other rotational guys. And you see how they've all accepted their roles. And it's just beautiful to watch.
Well, even the stars have accepted their roles. I mean, you're right. Harden is that first sub over to the bench, right? And then he can come in and run that second unit because he's the distributor. But you notice he's not looking for his numbers at all, right? I mean, he had 0 points after the first quarter, and the Nets had 40. And he's making some of these passes that aren't even the spectacular ones, just the simple ones quickly that catch the defense off guard. Obviously, Kyrie's been put in that more scoring role. And then Kevin Durant has really started, I think, to step it up on the defensive side to use his length to protect the rim a little bit, and that changes the dynamics for the team as well.
Yeah, I think you really see the value in a player when they can facilitate and make everyone better around them, and they can also score. Those guys are of huge value across the league. You look at the Clippers, they don't have that guy at all. Then you look at the Mavericks. Oh, Doncic, he can do both, right? It's the same thing with Harden. He can score. Obviously, he can still get into his bag and do his thing, but he's more so just, you know, really comfortable feeding those other guys and making the game that much easier. And it's so hard to guard that when the court is spread as open as it is today.
There's not many guys in the league, really, who could do. I mean, I'd say LeBron James, James Harden, Luka Doncic, Nikola Jokic in his own way. And that's getting close to it, right? I mean, that's Steph Curry draws so much attention, they have to trap him at half court.
But he's scoring mostly. Yeah, he's scoring. Damian Lillard's the same way. He's a scoring guard. But like that, to find a guy that can get you 10, 12 assists on any given night and still get you 25 points, that's rare.
Yeah, there's not many of those guys in the league. And of course, not many teams on the level of the Nets. And that's the ultimate, you know, look, Boston, they're just not there, right? This is just not real competition. And it's funny because you could joke about it or say Boston sucks, chant Boston sucks. Remember when that big trade went down? Boston won that trade. Everybody talked about that. And it is wild to see how many, you know, whatever years later it is. And it's not like Boston got nothing out of that trade. Obviously, Jason Tatum's on their team. They had a couple of runs. But the respective places of the franchises now, it does kind of wow you.
Yeah, it does. It's amazing that you know, the Nets, you know, a few years back gave up all those picks for an aging Pierce and Garnett. And now you look, you know, you fast forward a few years later, now you have this conglomerate of team that's dominant in all facets. They have young players. They have, you know, aging veterans who can still really contribute. You know, I don't see the Celtics winning a game at this point. I see them having a quarter or two, like, you know, they did in game one, the first quarter, where they, you know, may have a lead. But I think the Nets will figure them out with all that talent. It's just too deep.
What was a true sign, guys, of how dominant the Nets were is that the Nets were chilling on the court, sitting around, relaxing, and the Celtics were still in their timeout for another 2 minutes. I noticed this in game one a couple times. endgame, too, is that the Celtics were planning. Brad Stevens, I don't know if he was doing the Pythagorean theorem in the timeouts, but the Nets were just relaxing. Steve Nash had them out of the timeout early, and the Celtics were still planning, and nothing worked. And you mentioned Tatum. That was a weird play where he got hit in the eye there, and then he basically turned the ball over because he couldn't see. He fell out of bounds, and that's going to be something to watch, because if he did miss time or his eye is indeed swollen, I mean, it's already probably going to be a sweep, but this series is just dominating. It is over in four games if Jason Tatum is banged up.
Yeah, look, I mean, you hope he's okay, but it's irrelevant, right? I mean, the Celtics have no chance in this series. If they win a game, they should throw a parade. You know, they'll have energy in the building, though. We know that. And Kerry, I really want your perspective on something, because Kyrie Irving, after the game, talked about the return to Boston. Obviously, whenever you talk about the connection with the Nets, he is the connecting thread in other ways as well, going to Boston, deciding to leave for Brooklyn, going to Boston in that trade. He talked about going to TD Garden for game three, saying, hopefully we can just keep it strictly basketball. There's not belligerence or racism going on, subtle racism. I'm not the only one who can attest to this. The whole world knows it. I mean, of course, he references, I'm sure he's alluding to other incidents in Boston, what happened with Torrey Hunter, and of course, you know, what other NBA players may have talked about. But from your experience, both going on the road to opposing crowds and different areas of the country, what do you make of Kyrie saying that before this game?
I mean, that just shows you how much Kyrie understands the fan base in Boston, having been around the league for a while and played there and have seen that crowd. That is a unique crowd in Boston. I can tell you from my experience playing them in the playoffs and, you know, some of the remarks they made to my teammates, Jason Kidd in particular, and his family, that were just really uncalled for fan behavior directly to players and their families during a competition, right? You don't expect to hear those things, you know, directly to your face at the level that those fans were saying it. And so I know that Kyrie, it's expected and he knows it. It's going to happen that next game when he's there. They're going to say things to him, directly to him. That's how the fan base is. So he's preparing himself for that. Hopefully it won't be too much of a distraction. He can stay focused. And as he said, you know, it's all about the game and not necessarily about the extra stuff that's going to take place.
You know, you don't want to paint an entire fan base with one broad brushstroke, right? Because there are a lot of passionate Celtics fans, but there are too many people who have said something like Kyrie said, or something like you just said, for that not to be, you know, a pertinent comment or a relevant conversation. How much different have you found that fan base, or did you find that fan base, from some of the others that may have brought, you know, booze or, you know, passion towards you in a negative way?
Yeah, I think Boston is up there. I can't recall, you know, playing in, you know, we played in Indiana in the playoffs, you know, we played in the Garden. You play in places where, you know, listen, New York City fans for their Knicks, they're into it, right? So, but I think Boston fans kind of go, you know, a little bit over there. They cross the lines, right? And I think that that's what Kyrie has alluded to. And, you know, I played in Sacramento, where you hear those cowbells right behind the bench. They're banging these bells and, you know, they're saying stuff. But Boston fans are unique in that respect as far as crossing the lines. They've done that consistently to their opponents. You know, it's unfortunate that, you know, he's going to have that experience.
And that's something, you know, obviously players talk about, you know, internally. Is that a conversation that's had on the side?
Yeah, I think so. I think they'll be watching that. I think, you know, the team security is going to be watching those comments. If it's too close, they'll look to have those fans, you know, thrown out of the game. And so it will be there. We'll be looking forward to watching the game to see if it, you know, gets into Kyrie's head a little bit. And they're going to try that as a way to try to slow the Nets down. They have no other options. You know, without Jaylen Brown, they have no chance at winning. So they're going to try all these other things.
And there's a line too, right? And that's obviously any racist, hateful things that you just shouldn't say to people. I mean, like, there's an F you Trae Young thing, right? That he takes and uses as motivation. That's not quite the, or even in the same universe as some of the stuff that I'm imagining that Kyrie is talking about or others have talked about in Boston, and that should be eradicated clearly.
What is Nate McMillan complaining about that, by the way? Like, F you to a player? Like, is that that bad?
I mean, this is... It's not that bad, but it's just something you shouldn't say. I mean, why are you saying F you to anybody? I don't get that, or chanting. That's not something I would do, but it's not the same. I mean, it's not even...
But he's not talking about his mother. It's not like that personal.
I think for me, it becomes personal, right, to you and something that you've experienced. Like when Jason Kidd went through whatever he went through in Phoenix, that carried on. That's something personal to Jason Kidd, right? If someone's attacking... let's say, Kyrie's mental health. That's personal to Kyrie, something that he's been struggling and dealing with that the fans know about. That's crossing the lines, right? Like, it's not about basketball at that point. It's something about the guy's personal life.
But there is a degree of an antagonistic nature, I guess, that Kyrie has had with this Boston fan base, or a reason for a regular fan who's not coming in a hateful way to say, I want to watch this guy lose, right? I mean, because he did stand up there and say, I'm staying with Boston. You know, he did the whole thing with the stage there. So they're in a sports venue. You would imagine there should be a normal Bronx sort of cheer from Boston. But he is wary of that particular fan base from having been there. And that's where the difference is.
Yeah, I think you can expect the boos, right? That's normal when guys get traded, guys leave the franchise. You feel, you know, I don't know, hurt as a fan. But I think when you become vile in your language, that's where you draw the line. I'm a man. I'm a human being. I have, you know, I'm not going to allow you just to cross that line and say vile things to me just because you are a fan and you pay, you know, for tickets. So, you know, it's unfortunate that it happens like that. And I think, you know, listen, we love that. I think, you know, Kyrie, whenever you go on the road and you play in those environments, you love when the crowd is booing. It motivates you. You know, it gets you going. You know, maybe if they chant your name and say stuff, that's fine. But I think the extra stuff is where, you know, it's just uncalled for.
Meanwhile, moving on for Boston, as the Nets will do, it looks like the Bucks are going to do the same with the Miami Heat. And that may be right up there as the most intriguing series of the playoffs. I think the more I've watched Milwaukee and Drew Holiday, you know, what he can do defensively, and Chris Middleton's gotten better closing games. And obviously, you know, what Giannis brings and some of the size they have, some of the versatility they have. I kind of think Milwaukee may be the team with the best chance against Brooklyn in the big three.
Yes, I agree with you. I think what they have is size and Giannis and throwing Lopez, and then they have perimeter players and wings who can really, they're interchangeable guys that can guard multiple guys, and they're, you know, they have additional pieces. 140 something points they scored in that game. So the Bucks pose a serious threat to the Nets because of their scoring, because of how they shoot the ball from three as well. You know, their center shoots threes, and that's a big plus in today's game when you have five guys out there that are threats on the offensive end of the court. You don't have four guys where you can kind of help. No, you have five guys who can score over 20 points. So I think that's going to be an interesting challenge to watch. I think in the Nets, you know, this is where home court, I told you guys before, home court plays a huge advantage, and the Nets now have that against the Bucks. That matchup happens. We'll see how that plays out. But get your popcorn ready for that series. Get that second round against the Bucks, guys. That's where you want to be in the Barclays Center, watching the big three go up against Giannis and his crew.
Yeah, that's where we want to sit with Kerry. But Lindsey Vonn, we're not as good as Lindsey Vonn, so I don't know if we're ever going to sit down there.
We'll make it happen.
Yeah, I mean, Giannis is almost designed to go against the Nets. But when you talk about that home court of the crowd, what did you think of Barclays through two games? You guys were there for both. I was there last night. I liked the energy in the building last night. I felt more energy than I have at other times. And hopefully it's one of those things that continues to grow, because the Nets they're cultivating a fan base as well as having, you know, the established fans who have been around since you were playing.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I wish I'd have been playing in a place like that when I was playing for the Nets. I think the Meadowlands was a different place in its own regard at that time. But I think, you know, the Barclays Center, you know, it's just 13,000 for game one. I think last night it was like over 14,000. So they're kind of ramping it up. You would expect in the second round, maybe have full capacity, you know, 18,000, whatever it is in there. That's going to be really loud. You know, it's fun. The energy was there. You know, Durant spoke about it after the game. You know, in game one, he was saying, you know, it was just different for him to have that experience he hadn't had in Barclays in quite some time. So, you know, that's real home court. Whenever you're scoring, the fans are into it. You know, you have an exciting play. You get that thrust of energy from the group, from the fans. That's exciting. That's all sports fans really want to go and sit into an arena or a football stadium and have the fans really cheering on their feet, pumping the players up.
Well, a couple things. Well, game one was actually 14,000, around 400. So a lot more than everyone expected of the 10,000. Definitely loud. I think there'll be a couple factors moving forward here. One, they're going to be playing Milwaukee. There are a ton of Celtics fans at both these games. I don't know if you guys noticed. There was probably 30 to 40% at least Celtics fans. You're not going to have that because people in Milwaukee aren't coming to Brooklyn. Boston, they're just Boston people everywhere, and in New York. So that's a big factor. Two, by the time the second round starts, you're going to have a lot more people who are actually fully vaccinated. I think there's still a lot of people who just got their second shot or still in that 14-day waiting period. And I think 80 plus percent of the seats are fully vaccinated. sections. I mean, the stands were packed with fully vaxxed sections. So that's going to factor, and you're going to have a lot more Nets fans able to go to games, and you're probably not going to have the James Harden 50% discount that happened in games 1 and 2. I mean, they were essentially giving them away for $60 or $70. So I think all that, those factors will mean a lot more Nets fans in round two. Like you said, almost 100% capacity, no opposing fans, and I think a lot more energy when people are actually more comfortable being outside. We talk about being outside and being in a full arena. So that'll change around.
Well, I think game one, like I said, I think there was some hesitancy in general, and that was broken. And then, you know, you saw Travis Scott and I think Conway and a bunch of other people, where Lindsey Vonn sitting next to Kerry, were there at this game. Jake, are you talking about 30 to 40% Boston fans last night or game one? Because I didn't notice 30 to 40%, but I saw a smattering.
It might have been a game one, but there were a decent amount last night. Game one, I felt like everywhere, like my whole section, my roommate who I went with is a Boston fan, but there were a lot of Celtics jerseys. There were some Knicks jerseys in game one and yesterday, and there were some generic NBA jerseys as well. So there were a lot of people, I think, who just came to see playoff basketball and being in a full arena again. But I think we'll see it louder because, listen, I have a weird comparison. When I go to the Garden, this is night and day. I mean, it was loud at Barclays, but Garden, every time the Knicks would shoot a three, people rose to their feet on the shot attempt. I think we'll see more energy next round, though.
Well, Madison Square Garden, look, I'll never take away from MSG. It's a special building, special energy. But again, the Nets are building something at this point in time. And like I said, compared to other games that I've been to, I thought last night, maybe it was that I was newly in my vaccinated pass, where I can get places, though I don't know, I have to put my mask on in the hallway and then take it off when I sit down or whatnot.
It's wild. You don't have to wear it in the section, but you walk around everywhere you got to wear it. It's just confusing. My mask's getting dirty from falling on the floor, getting in my pocket.
Mine stays on the entire time. It ain't coming off. It's just weird, man. I'm not there yet. It's weird, man. I'm fully vaxxed, but it's weird taking it off. I can't do it yet.
That thing was fully off on the scoreboard, Kerry. You were showing that face and you were smiling on the scoreboard, so don't tell me it's on the whole time.
It went right back on, though.
It's a psychological thing, but as soon as I got that vaccination shot, I was ready to go. Peace out, mask.
I can't do it.
It's leaving acne and sweat. They gave out game two sweat towels. I call it sweat towels because I get drenched. I'm hoping they give those out at the Garden because, and it's a good, I love the towel wave. You know, it's playoff season, like we talked about last week. The thunder sticks and the towel wave is a true sign of playoff basketball.
And the Boston Celtics might as well wave in the towel. Game three in Boston, Friday, 8:30 p.m. Game four, the last game of the series, Sunday, 7 p.m. The rest,
we might have a special Monday podcast, Robin, because if this is over Sunday, we're coming out Monday.
All right, so there you go. Playoffs, you know, a whole different animal. Coming up, we're joined by Celtics fan, New York sports and hip-hop personality, Peter Rosenberg, right here on Full Court on Flatbush. We're joined now by a friend of mine and a radio personality, I think is a very good way to put it, at Rosenberg Radio on Twitter. He's on Hot 97 in the mornings, 98.7 in the afternoons with the Michael K Show, and he's got an album coming out, Peter Rosenberg Real Late, which we'll get to in a second. But Peter, there is one track on that album entitled Marcus Smart. I believe it was the lead single. He's name dropped in the track, but you also are a Celtics fan in enemy territory in New York. How does it feel knowing that once upon a time the Celtics won that big trade with the Nets and all they're going to get for it is a first round sweep?
Listen, I didn't want them to make the playoffs. I didn't want this series. I wanted them to lose to the Wizards and
tankers.
Just call it a year.
Tankers.
I was out. Like this year, listen, I'm the kind of fan that
can't win a championship, you tank it and go for the lottery pick.
Did not tank it, but once you show me that we are not serious about winning this year, like they got my hopes up. Do you guys remember like a few weeks after the All-Star break, they won like 5 of 6, something like that. We had a moment where momentum picked up and people started to believe like, oh, maybe they're righting the ship. And then immediately it just went bad again. I was just like, okay, we're not about it this year. I will live with that. And the Celtics are the greatest franchise in the history of the sport. We don't need to win every year. Let's just deal with next year. Let's not, oh, you want to beat the Wizards now and play the Nets. Okay, let's see how it goes. This is how it's going.
You know, we've had conversations in the past about, on Twitter at least, how you feel about Kyrie Irving, which isn't necessarily how a lot of Celtics fans feel about Kyrie Irving. His return up there, maybe the most interesting thing about game three and the remainder of the series. But as a Celtics fan, knowing he was there, and said he wants to stay there. And now knowing he's gone and putting it to them with the Nets, how do you feel about Kyrie?
As far as the Celtics and Kyrie go, it's not like I'm like spurned and upset. Like, I thought his effort there was whack, but like that happens. I mean, it wasn't the right fit. He wasn't into it. I mean, honestly, when he wasn't playing, they were really no worse for it. So when he left, I was like, all right, we never had a moment where it felt special in the first place. Like it never felt like it was completely gelling. But it's crazy because the best Kyrie that has played this year, every time he's been on the floor, if that dude was in Boston with this version of Tatum and Brown, that seems like a pretty competitive basketball team. So I don't know how it was never able to come together, but I don't think much about it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you make those comments about Kyrie. I think about their roster. I think it was a different roster, in particular with, you know, losing Rozier, I think. And also just having so many wings at that time, I think was a reason why the Celtics didn't gel as a unit when he was there. No excuses, but I think that was one of the main reasons why. But what's your take on his comments, you know, last night about the fans and how he's going to be received or what he's expecting to be received in game three with the comment about the Celtics racist fans and the remarks that they've made to opponent players over time?
I was flabbergasted. Boston, of all places, racist? This is crazier than the flat earth stuff. No, that was honestly, that was one of the most like very clear and I completely agree Kyrie moments. Like I now listen, it's almost like he's wishing it to happen in the sense that you mention it beforehand. Now you know the fans are going to be even worse to him than they would have been. So it becomes almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. It was going to be a terrible outing for him in Boston no matter what. I understand, I guess if you want to look at it deeper, there's a level of discomfort that is inherently there. A great black athlete going back to Boston, who by all counts has, quote, deserves to be booed because he was supposed to be there and he left. But with Boston's history, and now this being mentioned, it's sort of inherently going to be uncomfortable because they have the right to boo him out of the building. They knock yourself out. But the fact is in Boston, and you can ask, you know, Adam Jones of the Baltimore Orioles, you can ask players, other Celtics players, you know, about their experience in Boston and things that have been said to them. So listen, that wasn't a crazy thing to say. I sincerely hope that somehow in 2021, we get a pleasant surprise and he leaves and goes, yo, you know what? They booed me, but it was actually a really respectful crowd. But I'm not holding my breath.
What's Peter Rosenberg's take on fans crossing that line? We look at it across sports where you're seeing, you know, basketball, right? You're not hiding behind a helmet. You're not like baseball where you're, you know, totally far away from the fans. You're like right next to, you can hear what the fans are saying. And then sometimes they're going right in your face and they're telling you directly how they feel about you. What's Peter Rosenberg's take on fans sometimes crossing that line, whether it's Celtics fans or whoever, in the heat of the moment when they feel a certain way about certain players?
This is not, I'm not saying this because of the time we're living in, and I've always been sickened when people get personal. Like, my favorite thing in history is when Ron Artest went in the crowd. You want to treat people like animals at the zoo? That's how you want to act? Now you got a bleeping lion coming at you. That's what you wanted to treat people like. You wanted to treat them like, not like they're professionals and entertainers. And athletes are entertainers, but you're not treating these people like entertainers. You're treating them like zoo animals. And by the way, I'm not even okay with how we treat zoo animals. So the fact that you're, when that happens in any way, whether it's throwing things or saying things, I don't mean even just racial. I just mean saying nasty things. Like, to me, the line is, you suck, things like that. Now, listen, I went to Maryland like Robin did, okay? There are special rules for rivalries. You know, when Duke came to town, And people would come up with chants that were like horribly mean, but in a ridiculous way, like you're talking about people being ugly or, you know, Boozer's mom sucks, whatever those things are. I'm good. But when you get into the territory of being really personally nasty, no, I think it's disappointment. Unless you're playing Villanova, in which case, who cares? You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
it's hard. Like it's hard to boo Carrie. There's just nothing about him.
You know what my one Villanova joke is? The only thing that my friend who went to Villanova, the only joke was that people used to call it Vanilla No Fun.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
That's the lightest insult of all time.
We're just focused kids. That's all. We're just focused.
You know, Peter, one thing I'm jealous of a little bit is I used to work at the same station you work at now. And in fact, I believe your first show with 98.7 FM was with me. And we talked.
It was.
We talked some hockey, which is just odd for the two of us. but I wanted New York basketball to be good for the longest time, right? Where I was talking myself into Eddie Curry and all these other things, trying to recruit LeBron. And then you know how big a Jay-Z fan I was. So I was hyped when the Nets first moved to Brooklyn and all that behind the concerts and everything. And I was just trying to will it into existence because I believe in its heart of hearts, New York wants to be a basketball town, but the teams just haven't let that happen. You know, the Knicks have won one playoff series since I graduated from high school. But now seeing the Knicks having this season that they're having and the Nets superstar laden and this global team all of a sudden, the most hated team in the league, according to some sort of survey. What's it been like and what kind of impact has that had in New York sports talk?
Well, it's kind of weird because there's still not a – we talk Nets a lot, but there's not a ton. And, you know, Carrie could probably speak to this. And I don't know what it felt like, you know, during your career, but, like, it still doesn't feel like the conversation is proportionate at all. You know, like the Knicks dominate conversation when they suck. They dominate conversation when they're good. And I actually like the Nets as a villain thing because it actually gives more reason for conversation because you have so many Knicks fans who are hating on the fact that the Nets are good that at least with the Nets as villains, I think it creates a more fun dynamic of conversation because the fact is, even if the Nets win a championship or two, you know, I don't want to say it's not a New York championship, but it in no way will resemble anything like if the Knicks were to win a championship. And if I was a Nets fan, I'd kind of enjoy that. It's sort of like your own small market team right here in New York, but it's not like they're the Knicks.
But they're the biggest national talking point, which is interesting, right? Like as far as the whole season. And then there's definitely a group of Knicks fans, and I'm not saying all of them, but where, you know, the rent in Manhattan was expensive when I lived there, but apparently it's free because they can't talk about anything else other than the Nets when something is going on with the Knicks, right? And that is strange to me. Like, didn't they do a Brooklyn sucks chant before game one against the Hawks?
Yeah, and they did a We Want Brooklyn chant, which I was like, no, you don't. Want Brooklyn? Hold on. Yeah, you want to make it long enough that you get to play Brooklyn. You don't want Brooklyn. No, they do. There is a level of obsession and jealousy that comes with that. But also, listen, Knicks fans right now are having a moment. That moment may be on the fringe as we're recording that right now on Wednesday, because if they lose tonight, I think it starts to get very scary if you're a Knicks fan. But I would love to be a true blue Nets fan right now because you have the best team in the city and somehow this city continues to sleep on you in some ways. So, like, I don't know. I think it would be a pretty fun ride now.
I mean, all you got to do is just take that Celtics jersey and just toss it away. I mean, you know, who cares?
By the way, I will tell you, I love the Barclays Center. They treat me great. It's a lovely facility.
Yep.
Shout out to the Nets. They really are. They've been nothing but class in every way of dealing with them ever that I've ever had.
I agree.
They're not villains in real life. But as a wrestling aficionado, because you also do work for the WWE, I just saw you on the A&E documentary. I think the last one I saw was Shawn Michaels, who's the greatest of all time, at least in the ring, in my mind. But when you say the villain thing, what do you think of the NWO comparison with Durant and Kyrie coming in as Hall and Nash and then Harden later joining as Hollywood Hogan?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's perfect. It's perfect. The only thing is Kyrie messes up the gimmick because Kyrie has like a very heelish personality, but the things he's saying are really positive. So like you look at Kyrie's energy at the podium and it's such a heel, but then he's like, yo, man, you know, we just got to care about people all over the globe. And I'm like, wait, you're supposed to be saying bad guy things. Like he has like the way he sits at the podium is like he's so annoyed to have to be there. But then when he talks, I love most everything that he says. But no, it's the perfect. Anytime you have, this is the best three players who have ever assembled. I mean, I argued this from the second they got there, that there's no big three that if you add up the total scores of all three players, like let's look at like video Madden scores.
80 points.
These are the highest. This is the highest Madden score you could ever get for three players on one team.
Kerry, there was no way they were doing this entire conversation without talking wrestling. I mean, Robin Lundberg, Peter Rosenberg, and like Kaz are like the three guys in media who are always talking wrestling. That's going to wrap up the wrestling portion of the show.
Well, yeah, our Venn diagram of interests has a lot in common, Peter and I.
I want to hear more about the music side. Like, what really got you inspired to do this album, like what you did in this market right now, and especially with COVID and all the things that was going on? Like, what inspired you to really put this out there?
You know, I had talked for a long time about making music, and I had. I mean, I've made multiple mixtapes with original music for people before, and then I wanted to do it again, and I started making a project that was going to be like more commercial, and I was kind of like, what am I doing? And I wasn't particularly inspired by it. And then I started tapping into a lot of newer artists that I really liked, who were like underground artists that really sort of fed my old passion for it. And once I started doing that, I was like, oh man, these guys are dope. Oh, and they actually still like, this means something to them. Like when I was playing their songs on the radio, I saw how much it like impacted them still, which isn't always the case anymore. And it just sort of was like a cycle. Like they kind of inspired me to want to do more work. I was playing their records. They were hyped up. It sort of started organically, you know, forming a bit of a relationship. And then you have other artists who are, you know, West Side Gun, who I've already been supporting, you know, Griselda for a long time, and all the legends who are on the project, you know, Rock Marcy and Jim Jones, Ghostface, Meth, Ray, Styles P. These are all just artists that I already really admire, and got lucky, found some great producers. And once I got a couple songs done, I was like, oh, I think I could actually pull this off. And here we are. It's done.
You know, I want to congratulate you, first of all. It's Real Late. Peter Rosenberg, Real Late is the album. It's June 4th. The drop date. I've known you, I mean, going back to school, right? I was at Maryland, and you were still doing your hip-hop show at Maryland from Dusk Till Dawn.
Correct.
At that time. And the come up to come up to New York and get on Hot 97. And I know the style of music, not that you don't like other things, but the style of music that it is at your heart and your core. And that is the sound that's on this album. I mean, it sounds like late night in New York in the best kind of way. And I thought the artists reciprocated that, you know, with their performances. You know, I love Styles' verse on the track that he's on. That Mind Over Matter song is crazy, dude. I love that joint on the record. You mentioned producers, Disco Vietnam. I know him going back away. The fact that he got to do a Ghostface track. So just knowing where you come from and what you're all about. I mean, I still have people, by the way, thanks for the look when you had me on at Hot 97, talk to me about that interview. For what you're about and to put this out, I do want to, you know, give you a hearty congratulations, because the project is tough.
Thank you, man. And I think maybe the biggest compliment is I keep hearing about Mind Over Matter, and that song by Jay Nice and Ido. They're two of the least famous artists to the casual ear on the project. And yet that is a song that keeps getting mentioned to me over and over again. And so that really excites me, because I know people are going to love the Ghostface record. I know they're going to love the Rock Marcy, the Styles P. Like, I know those records very clearly and decidedly. If you're ahead, you're going to enjoy those. But to hear that Mind Over Matter keeps hitting people in that way is, it really makes me happy. I mean, Jay Nice is from Delaware. He's from friggin' Delaware. You know, so like, I really wanted, my hope was that this project would, obviously, I'm not going to sit here and lie. Of course, you're doing it for yourself. You know, I want the credit of showing that I can do this, but you really hope that it's going to benefit all the artists that are on it to have a bigger light shined on them. So when I hear that, it's me.
What is the Peter Rosenberg, like, Khaled? Like, what's your We Da Best? Like, do you have like a We Da Best kind of drop?
I have drops I play on my radio show, and I considered using them on the album. I just found it not for me. It works for Khaled. That's who Khaled is. It's who he's always been. And then guess what? I got the best reward. So I didn't inject myself all over the album. And I think, Robin, you would agree, for how big an ego I have, I think I'm sort of understated on the album. It's not like, it's in the intro, you hear about me. And then the only other times it comes up, it just came from artist references, which I never asked for. I ended up getting rewarded sort of for not chasing it, kind of.
You're not in there claiming to be the 24/7 champ or nothing like that.
That's going on. That's a drop I love. That's one of the drops I play, is them announcing me as 24/7 champ. But I left it alone, and then the artist gave me shout outs on it. It was great. The funniest part is explaining this project to my mother. This is the only thing in the world that is not understood by both internet trolls who go, what did you even do on this? And also my mother.
I don't hear you, Pete.
Brooklyn and Jewish? Is she from Brooklyn and she's Jewish?
No, my dad is from Brooklyn and Jewish. My mom grew up upstate, but she was actually born overseas.
Peter, what are you doing? Rosenberg Radio.
No accents, no New York, my very New York family, no New York accents somehow.
And you said it would compete for Album of the Year. Is that saying that J. Cole in the offseason is number one and you will be two, or will you compete with J. Cole for number one, Peter Rosenberg?
I am putting into the universe that it's going to get nominated for the Best Rap Album Grammy. That's where I believe it will belong there.
Wow.
I believe it will occupy that spot that Freddie Gibbs and Alchemist were nominated in last year. I think if people give it its proper listen, they would think, you know what? This is not an unreasonable thing to suggest. It's like a really thorough body of work. But that J. Cole, I'm not trying to compete with J. Cole. I mean, J. Cole, that's his best work to date. I love it. So
I agree with that.
But I'll take being nominated in the same category though, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, and it's, like I said, it's a rap fan's kind of rap record, right? Like not that there aren't other types of rap styles. I don't like to be dismissive and be New York biased and all that my entire life, right? Even when I was wearing the Yankee hat down in Maryland because of Jay-Z. But when you talk about that kind of style, it's there. But you mentioned competing, and it's interesting because you do a lot of competing, not just for the 24/7 championship, but in Morning Drive with Hot 97, in Afternoon Drive with the Michael K Show, now against Carton and Roberts and Diet Cokes. What do you make of that aspect of your career and where you're at and the role you play in winning those competitions?
I want to do well. I want to compete. I want to win. I've done a lot of competing. I've done a lot of winning. You know, I take a lot of pride in the trajectory of the K Show after I got there. They did a lot of groundwork, and I do firmly feel that I helped take it over the top, and I'm proud and also oddly impressed by the first time like that management at a company was like, we have an idea, and it actually worked. You know, I think it was like really well done. So shout out to Tim McCarthy and Ryan Hurley. Like they actually, and Justin Craig, like they got it right. So I do take the competition seriously, but I know this sounds corny, but in my 40s now, I just don't spend as much time thinking about what other people do. And that takes a lot of work. I just, it's really hard, but professional jealousy is part of the things that really messed up some of my life to a certain extent and made me unhappy. And I think messed up other parts of my life. And so while I want to win and I sincerely do not like my competition and either radio show, I just try not to worry about them as much. Like I try to just be the right person, be a good person and let the chips fall. I have competed in my life against some people that are real pieces of work. And I'm using the word work super generously. And I always find it odd that I've kind of ended up with these people in my life. Like, and I'm always like, how this person? But when I've learned to chill and just let it be and know that and handle yourself like a good person and treat people well, the ratings come in cycles. Do the best you can and see where it falls.
So if you meet Craig Carton in an alleyway, it's not going to be all love and handshakes is basically what you're saying.
Oh, no, I wouldn't say anything nice. I definitely wouldn't say anything nice to his face. I didn't want to interview him. We had him up there. I thought it was a bad idea. I knew the second he walked out the door, he would take a dump on us. I mean, like, I haven't said a word about the guy, and he did an interview a couple months ago and just straight up called me not talented. It's just these things that are unnecessary. You know, and I just like, I'm like, I'm not going to play those games anymore. Believe me, I had an opportunity to dance on your grave and I did not, because that's not what I'm not going to do that. You know, it's just not an unnecessary thing to do.
Boycotting Diet Coke too, Robin. Robin, he's clearly never going to have a Diet Coke ever again as well, right?
I love Diet Coke. I'm a big Diet Coke guy.
I like the zero, the Cokes with the zero, but it's the right attitude. It's the right attitude to have. And guess what? You know, he's not going to have a record with Method Man or Ghostface or West Side Gun, boom, boom, boom. You know, he's not going to have that.
But by the way, but I did see a clip of like right when he came back to the air, I saw a clip. And I noticed, I don't know if you noticed this, right around when he came back, he like started trying to add little hip hop stuff to his repertoire, almost like he's trying to cut into like my space. Yo, it was a clip of him rapping Rapper's Delight. It's one of the most painful cringe moments in the history of the medium. So you're right. I think I'm safe in my space. Just
there you go.
Do you think he knows how to use the term bet properly?
So many layers.
All right, that was pretty good. Come on. What else is good is the album Peter Rosenberg, Real Late. Again, congratulations, dude. It sounds like the culmination of a career to me.
Well, I hope it doesn't mean my career is over, but yes.
You know what I mean. The part where you have to take the bow.
By the way, shout to our mutual friend, Disco Vietnam, who named the album because I was like, I'm so stressed. I have to come up with a name. I remember where I was in Tampa for WWE, and I was like, I need to come up with something. I'm frustrated. I need to know the name. Literally, in very our friend Barry fashion, he writes me back 30 seconds later. He was like, call it Real Late. It's the name of your show. You've been doing it for 12 years. The show's been building up to this point, right? I was like, okay, that was it.
I like it.
Get Real Late right on time, June 4th, 2021, wherever you stream, wherever you get music nowadays. And of course, you can catch Peter Rosenberg, Ebro in the morning on Hot 97, the Michael Kay Show in the afternoon, and the WWE. You're like The Rock, man, because at some point, and you know, I feel like I have this on a much lesser scale, but at some point we have to have a limit on jobs that one is allowed to have. That needs to be a cap.
I want to. It's called a big enough salary, and then I'll only have one.
There you go.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Peter.
The next stop is Barclays Center. Flatbush Avenue.
That does it for episode 23, the John Williamson edition of Full Court on Flatbush, our Brooklyn Nets podcast from the New York Post. Thanks to Jake Brown and Brian Munguia for producing the show. Go to Apple Podcasts right now and please give us a 5-star rating. Write a nice review. We appreciate it. For Kerry Kittles, I'm Robin Lundberg. We're back next week after the Nets-Celtics series is likely over. Thanks for listening. Enjoy games 3 and 4, and let's go Nets.